morning we continue our series on the life of Joseph. We turn again to Genesis chapter 41. We'll begin reading at verse 25 through the end of the chapter. When we considered this last time, we read the first 36 verses of the chapter and considered how God was confronting Pharaoh. As we look at the chapter again this morning, our lens will be different and we'll focus on the latter part of the chapter that we did not cover last time. Let's hear the word of the Lord as we find it in Genesis 41, beginning at verse 25. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years, and the 7 good heads are 7 years. The dreams are one. And the 7 thin and ugly cows which came up after them are 7 years, and the 7 empty heads blighted by the east wind are 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. Indeed, 7 years of great plenty will come throughout all the land of Egypt, but after them, 7 years of famine will arise, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will deplete the land. So the plenty will not be known in the land because of the famine following, for it will be very severe." And the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice, because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. "Now therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land to collect 1/5 of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 plentiful years. And let them gather all the food of those good years that are coming, and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh. Let them keep food in the cities. Then that food shall be as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land may not perish during the famine." So the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find such a one as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Inasmuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took his signet ring off his hand and put it on Joseph's hand. And he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. And he had him ride in the 2nd chariot which he had, and they cried out before him, "Bow the knee." So he set him over all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh also said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no man may lift his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt." And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah. And he gave him as a wife Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. So Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. Now in the 7 plentiful years, the ground brought forth abundantly. So he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt and laid up the food in the cities. He laid up in every city the food of the fields which surrounded them. Joseph gathered very much grain as the sand of the sea until he stopped counting, for it was immeasurable. And to Joseph were born 2 sons before the years of famine came whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God has made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. And the name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. And the 7 years of plenty which were in the land of Egypt ended, and the 7 years of famine began to come, as Joseph had said. The famine was in all the lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. So when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Then Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, "Go to Joseph. Whatever he says to you, do." The famine was over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians. And the famine became severe in the land of Egypt. So all countries came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain, because the famine was severe in all lands. In response, open our Bibles to Genesis 41 again. Let's recap what we've considered so far in the life of Joseph. We began in Genesis 37 with the realization that this was the history of Jacob's family. It was a messy history, but recorded so that the people of Israel, God's children, would understand how God takes care of His covenant people. And we followed the history as Joseph was sold into Egypt, as he remained faithful in Potiphar's house, as he remained faithful in prison. Along the way, we considered Joseph's own dreams of his greatness and how he interpreted the dreams of others. As we already mentioned this morning, looking at Genesis 41 several weeks ago, we considered how God was challenging Pharaoh through Pharaoh's dreams. And yet the instruction is to the people of Israel who would read this later, that God is over all nations and over all the hearts of the kings of the earth, including the heathen ones. And simultaneous to God's confrontation of Pharaoh, we have God's exalting a man of His own choosing, Joseph. And so as we consider the second part of this chapter, our theme is God exalts Joseph. We want to consider the manner in which God exalts him, Joseph's response to his exaltation, and again, consider the lesson that God is leaving for His people who will read and, yes, thousands of years later, study this passage. So let's look first at the way in which God exalts Joseph, because it's very purposeful. I want to suggest to you this morning there's seven ways in this chapter that God's exalting Joseph. First, God's exalting Joseph by blessing him with His Spirit. And this isn't an immediate gift that comes in verse 36. It's something that God's blessed him with over time, and it's gradual. We can go back all the way to chapter 39 and read numerous times how God was with Joseph and God blessed him. And Joseph was full of understanding. This is evident already in verses 25, 28, 32. As Joseph's interpreting Pharaoh's dreams and he's telling Pharaoh, "This is of God. God is saying this to you. God is doing this." In chapter 41, verse 33, it's Pharaoh who says, "We need to select a wise and discerning man." And Joseph is realized to be that. But from one who was mocked for his interpretation of dreams before, he's now seen as one who is wise for his interpretation of dreams. Because the Spirit of God in a man is a blessing. And this that wisdom that Joseph has is recognized now by this pagan king. And that's in God's providence. And so, first, God's exalting Joseph by blessing him with his spirit. But second, God's exalting Joseph by calling him to a high position. Put this in contrast with what had happened previously. Joseph had gone to his own father, and his own father had rebuked him. But now Pharaoh, the greatest monarch of all time, welcomes him. And look at verse 40. He says, "You shall be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you. See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." God's exalting Joseph to this position. And there's something remarkable about the opportunity, not just because God will use it, but in the sense that God is putting this young man in that context, knowing what it would include. Because Joseph's going into Pharaoh's court. He can't even look like a Hebrew. Go back to verse 14 of this chapter. Joseph was required to shave and to change his clothing. Some of that obviously could have just been because of prison. But there's also a certain expectation within Pharaoh's courts. There's part of Egyptian culture that demanded a man was clean shaven. He couldn't look like the Hebrew shepherd he was. And yet God puts him into that position. And third, God exalts Joseph by clothing him. Again, this is a reversal. Because what had his brothers done? His brothers had torn from him his coat of many colors. Potiphar's wife had held his coat and stripped it from him. But now, Pharaoh, verse 42, takes his signet ring off of his hand and puts it on Joseph's hand, and he clothes him in garments of fine linen and puts a gold chain on his neck. Joseph is restored to the finery that he had, and he's given even more. Now, rings. Yes, essentially it's the financial ring of the empire. He's in control of the resources. It's thought that the chain of gold around the neck was the symbol of authority, much like even the mayors today still have what they wear around their necks. It's their symbol of authority. Instead of iron fetters around his legs, his ankles, it's gold. Fourth, God exalts Joseph by granting him honor. Verse 43, Pharaoh clothes him and says, "You ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cry out before you, bow the knee." And Pharaoh says further, "Without your consent, no man may lift his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt." Here's respect of the government dignitaries. And the people are to respect you. You are in my motorcade. And they stop when you come by. This is the reversal. The false accusations and the shame that serving in prison brought. Joseph's going from being one who's just serving other prisoners to one who, as he walks down the broad ways of Egypt, people would stop and bow to. In respect to his authority, he's second in command. But he's second in command to a pagan king, and pagans were bowing to him. And yet this is an honor that God's giving to him. And Pharaoh gives Joseph a new name. "You shall be called Zaphnath-Paneah." There's debate over what this means, but generally it's recognized that Pharaoh's recognizing in Joseph some aspect of his God. One possible meaning is God lives and sees. God's exalting Joseph to honor. Fifth, God's exalting Joseph with the blessing of family. Again, it's a reversal of what he had taken from him. It was his brothers who stole away family from Joseph by selling him to slave traders. It was, in a sense, what Potiphar's wife improperly offered to him that he refused. But he's given a wife, Asenath. And in a sense, this comes through Pharaoh. And we shouldn't use this as a rationale for relationships with pagans. But it replaces, again, what was taken away from Joseph. And God is saying in His providence, here. And then verse 50, to Joseph were born two sons before the years of famine came. Can you imagine this man who was alone, single, in a prison, suddenly married with sons, attached really to an important family in the empire, recognizing the blessing. Sixth, God exalts Joseph with providential confirmation of what Joseph had already said. Because verse 46, Joseph went through all the land of Egypt. Now in the seven plentiful years, the ground brought forth abundantly. So he gathered very much as the sand of the sea, for it was immeasurable. The 7 years of much were even beyond expectation. But then the 7 years of plenty ended in Egypt, and the years of famine began, as Joseph had said, and the severity seems to be greater than what was expected. But what God had said in the interpretation of that dream through Joseph was confirmed by providence and history. And Joseph's exalted because of the truth he spoke. And that leads us to the seventh way God exalts Joseph, and that's universal acclaim. Because the people of Egypt come asking for bread. And there's some. If you look at verse 55, the land was famished, the people cried, and Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, go to Joseph, whatever he says to you, do. And the famine was not just in Egypt, but over all the face of the earth. And Joseph opened up the storehouses in all the cities around Egypt, and he sold to the Egyptians. And the Egyptians came, and all countries came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain, because the famine was severe in all lands. And Joseph's suddenly at the top, not even of just world, or not even of just Egypt, but of the world, in terms of who people are coming to. Go from Genesis 37. He's a hated sibling, mocked for his dreams, deserted, imprisoned, shamed, tempted by sin, surrounded by loneliness, ultimately forgotten by someone who said, I will remember you when I get out. And he was faithful in all those little things, and we've considered that in many ways already. But I want you to realize that as we come to this moment of exaltation, there's something behind the scenes that Joseph was also faithful in. Joseph had learned along the way. He's not the same quick, unwise younger brother. Along the way, Joseph had learned enough about agriculture and food management and organizational leadership to suggest to Pharaoh what he did. And it's possible that the interpretation, the practical outworkings of that, were part of what God had given to Joseph. But how does God bless today? Wisdom is usually the result of applied study. And Joseph was not just taking this interpretation and saying it to Pharaoh. He was wise enough to implement the whole plan and make it work. Joseph had used these years to learn, to study. And it's important that we understand this exaltation and the way it's happening for the right. It's important we understand it properly. Because God's exalting Joseph for God's providential purposes. Joseph's not being rewarded in the sense that, oh, you did right, okay, here's your reward. Nor should we think that God's saying a role in Egypt is greater than a role in your family. That's not it either. But God's exalting Joseph to be used by himself. Joseph was faithful in all these smaller things. Joseph was faithful in wisdom. Now God's using him in greater spheres of opportunity. But it's for God's purpose still. And one of these opportunities is the role in a pagan government. Joseph takes his wisdom and he uses it to honor the Lord, yes, but to bless mankind at the same time. Some of us are called to do similar things. Use our skills, our wisdom in agriculture, in business, in medicine, in design, in the arts, to bless others, even as we honor the Lord. And it's not always easy. You just imagine how God's exalting Joseph to this position and Joseph's finding him in these new spheres, new roles. What's he going to do? What's he going to say? Some of the cultural things must have been shocking. He's never seen this before. He's never dealt with this before. But he's suddenly the vice president of the country. Is the new richness and the new respect is the fact that he's now famous and highly connected. His father-in-law is the priest of On, a city at the center of sun worship. Is Joseph going to just become this representative of Egypt? Is he going to be Egyptianized? Is he going to be influenced by that culture? Is he going to remember to give God the glory? Or is he just going to be an Egyptian? You see, God exalts Joseph because he's been faithful in the past. But now that he's exalted, will he remember to give God the glory? You see, the hardest place to give God honor is not in the pit, and it's not in the prison. The hardest place to give God the glory is in the palace. When we're exalted, when we're honored, and when new good things are coming to us, when we're blessed and things, yes, seem to be opening up for our way, we become less prayerful. We become less dependent. We're even less aware, I think, of what God's doing in our lives. And we allow prosperity and we allow the new prestige and we allow the powerful friends and the connections and the acquaintances to make us forget the God who put us here and the God whom we serve and the God whom we've called on for help in the past and the God who has proven to be faithful. We forget. Because it's going so well. I'm out of prison. People honor me. People are bowing before me now. In a sense, my dreams are coming true. What would become of Joseph? Well, in his heart, Joseph continued to be a man who served the true and living God. And we know this. And that's our second thought, Joseph's response to exaltation. There's clues in this chapter about how Joseph lived in this exalted role. I want to point out two of them. The first is the naming of his sons. Joseph called the name of his firstborn Manasseh. For God has made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. And the name of the second he called Ephraim. For God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. How is this a clue as to what Joseph was thinking? Well, he's a highly exalted man. He's married to Asenath. His father-in-law is the priest of On. And what does he do when he receives little boys? He gives them Hebrew names, not Egyptian ones. And there's more. Who is first on his mind when he's blessed with these two little blessings? God. Manasseh is born and Joseph says, God has made me forget my pain. Ephraim's born, and Joseph says, God has made me to know goodness. Yes, I am here, but I want my children to be daily reminders to me of what God has done for me and in my life. And you imagine every day being reminded by your children, God has made me forget, and God has made me blessed. It's easy to imagine why we would want to be reminded of our blessings. But why would you remind yourself of what you've forgotten? It almost sounds contradictory. Why would you name your son Manasseh? I want to remember what I have forgotten. Because I think there's a clue here as to what's going on in Joseph's heart about his past. He's dealing with the past painful memories. And yes, Joseph is healing from the sins against him. Let's bring it a little closer to home to help us understand. Perhaps you are having a hard time forgetting something that has happened. Sins against you, maybe sins you've done. And what's even more painful is how these memories keep coming back and they keep affecting your present responses. And you walk through life, but all you see is this past. The past pain, the past struggles. You can't get over it. You can't whitewash over the black and colorful canvas of what's happened. And Joseph can't just whitewash it either. But he's reshaping the past memories by putting it into this context of what God has now done. In being exalted, the memories are there, but the memories are of the past. He's not focusing on that anymore. And every day he gets up and he sees his son Manasseh. And Manasseh is a daily reminder. God has redeemed the hurt of the past. God's been faithful in bringing me through. God has made me forget all my toil as a slave. God has made me forget all that my brothers did to me. And I want to be reminded of that every day. I am forgetting because of what God has done. And he's acknowledging how God's led him through. And in a sense, it's foreshadowing of what's going to happen in the next chapter. He's going to meet these brothers again. How is he going to interact with these brothers? Well, he's ready because God has helped him forget. And that's why a daily reminder of what we've been given is good. And he names his second son Ephraim, God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. I'm still here. It's still the same land. But God has made me fruitful here. God has a purpose. God has put me here. God has blessed me here. God, yes, has even made me a blessing to others here. And I want to be reminded of that so I don't get heady and haughty. I don't get a puffed up head because I remember every day as I look at Ephraim, God has put me here. God has blessed me. That's one way Joseph's heart's revealed. And the second is in the outworking of the dream. Because he doesn't just go to Pharaoh and say, this is the interpretation of your dream. 7 years of good, 7 years of famine. You need someone to run this program. It comes to him. And he doesn't just say it's good words. He has such faith in the God who has interpreted this dream that he executes this program. That too should be remarkable. Because here's a former slave who's now vice president. Right? Little Hebrew Joseph, 17 years old. Now the mighty Zaphnath-Paneah over all Egypt. And it doesn't go to his head. He doesn't become so self-centered that he forgets the God who said these things. He doesn't become so enamored with the gold and the glitz that he forgets. No, God has said this is going to happen. And yes, even after 7 years of extraordinary blessing, I am still confident the 7 years of famine are coming because God has said. And God's word is true. You see, he doesn't just talk like a good statesman. He's not talking like a politician. He's talking like one who is faithful to the Lord. And so it's in small things that Joseph's found faithful. In prison and in homes. But now exalted to the highest in the land, Joseph is found faithful. And the discernment and the wisdom that attracted Pharaoh to him in the first place is the discernment and the wisdom that allows him to stand strong even when in pagan Egypt. He never lost his identity as one of God's people. Even after 14 years of being vice president of the only country in the world that had enough resources to keep people alive. And this constant faithfulness points us, I think, to the greater lesson behind this history. Because it's God's finger writing so that the people of Israel, as they're entering the promised land, would remember who provides for them. God. Whose word is true? God. Who is faithful? God. Because what happens? The famine becomes severe in all the land. And all the countries come to Egypt to buy grain. And what was written in Genesis 12 becomes true in Genesis 41 and 42. The promise to Abraham that in his family, or from his family, all the families of the earth will be blessed. Here's one man through whom all the families of the earth are being blessed. And yet we know that's not the final fulfillment of that promise. Just as the promise to Abraham meant more, here's more to this lesson of exaltation for the Israelites. This chapter is not just a record of famine in Egypt. There's more famines in Egypt. The history books are clear about that. This is not just a plan about not suffering and not dying from famine. This is God telling people, I know what's going on. I see when you're in dire straits. I know who's trusting. I know whom I'm exalting and using. I know that I'm preparing for the salvation of my people. They will not die or be forsaken. I am working all of this out so that the family of Jacob might know. I care for them. And yes, now we're reading this, studying this thousands of years later, and we must trust the same God of our fathers for the promise that He is working out all things for good, for salvation. Because what's the ultimate promise to Abraham? It's the promise of the Savior of the nations. He is coming from Abraham's seed. And in that Savior, all of the families of the earth will be blessed. And yes, Joseph is really a sooner than expected fulfillment. But he's not the final or the full fulfillment. And in a sense, then, we can see Joseph as a signpost pointing towards the greater coming Messiah, the Savior of the nations. And up to this point, we've not dealt with Joseph as a foreshadowing of Jesus Christ. But we ought not to overlook it as we go through this passage. The parallels are too many and too important. Joseph and Jesus' parents pondered what they were told about their sons. Joseph and Jesus were both hated and initially dismissed by their own brothers. Joseph and Jesus both resisted temptation. Both Joseph and Jesus are wonderful counselors who astonished those who heard them. Both Joseph and Jesus had to stand up to authorities, and even when the message would not have been popular, they spoke the truth. Joseph sold for 20 pieces of silver. Jesus is sold for 30. Joseph begins his life's work at age 30. Jesus begins his public ministry at age 30. Joseph is granted wisdom and discernment. Jesus, full of the Spirit, is the way, the truth, and the life. We can see God taking Joseph from the pit to the palace. And yes, we can see Jesus being raised from the grave and exalted, ascending to His throne in glory. And Joseph, yes, given authority over this land of Egypt and gold placed around his neck. But Jesus ascending into heaven, sitting at the right hand of God the Father Almighty, crowned with glory and honor. And ultimately, Joseph's exalted by God, yes. But not for his own benefit. Joseph's exalted by God so that all the people of the earth would be blessed. And the people clamor to Pharaoh to meet their needs. And what does Pharaoh say? Go to Joseph. Go to Joseph. Whatever he says to you, do. We're surrounded. We live in a day of spiritual famine. What do you say when people come to you? Go to Joseph. Whatever he says to you, that do. He has spiritual food. He's the bread of heaven. He's a source of life. He invites all who are hungry to come to him and eat. If you're thirsty, there's plenty of refreshing water. He doesn't limit his availability. He doesn't say you need to be rich. It's for all. It's free. It's available without money and without price. His blessings come at no cost to you. It's the riches of His grace, abundant grace, rich grace, unsearchable, of infinite value. And you need to believe these resources are still available. coming as needy refugees, helpless in ourselves, with empty hands. Coming to Joseph, the greater Joseph. Realizing the severity of our situation. If He doesn't hear us, if He doesn't give us what we need, we will die. But all who come to Him in faith, He will not cast away. So come with your needs, because He is the full riches, the full supply that God has given. And just as Joseph's exaltation was not for himself, Christ's exaltation leads to great blessings for others, for us, for all nations of the earth as they come and bow the knee. They will be blessed by the exalted God. Let's ask. Let's praise. Let's realize that these blessings can still be for us today.